This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A roadblock for Blackstone.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Private equity firm Blackstone Group is set to launch an IPO in about 10 days, but Congress could throw a wet blanket on the stock offering. Yesterday, leaders of the Senate Finance Committee introduced a bill that might double the tax burden for Blackstone and any other private equity group that goes public. The bill would treat private equity like other corporations that make money from investors. One positive for Blackstone, since it already filed the paperwork on the IPO, it would get a reprieve from the new law for 5 years. One place in the world that's virtually untouched by private equity is Africa. Less than 1% of private deals happen there. But that is changing, say the leaders at the World Economic Forum on Africa. Terry Fitzpatrick reports from Cape Town.
Analysts say last year there was a five-fold increase in the number of investors looking for African companies to buy. Political instability and volatile economies make Africa risky, but a typical takeover here will generate 5 to 6% more profit than deals in the U.S. That might not sound like much, but the South African government's pension fund manager, Brian Molefe, warned the World Economic Forum that that little something extra could lead to trouble.
When people take higher risks and they make some money, they're willing to take more and more and more risk. And that is what leads to eventually a very dangerous situation. We're going to have some spectacular collapses.
A takeover failure in Africa can have a big impact because the economy here is smaller. Still, Molefe says any kind of investment in Africa is badly needed. In Cape Town, I'm Terry Fitzpatrick for Marketplace.
Oil prices shot up yesterday. That gave oil company stocks and Wall Street a lift. The Dow gained 71 points to 13,553. The NASDAQ added 17 to close at 2599. The S&P 500 put on 7 to 1522. The Asian markets climbed about 0.5% today. European shares are up in the early going. Oil's trading at $67.50 a barrel. Marriott says it's creating a new brand of boutique hotels. It's working with designer Ian Schrager. He's known for his intimate hotels, and he was behind the famous nightclub Studio 54. But do Marriott and boutique even belong in the same sentence? More now from Ashley Milne-Tite.
That all depends on what you think of as boutique. At the press conference announcing the move, Ian Schrager said a boutique hotel isn't determined by size, but by attitude. Jeff Weinstein, editor of Hotels Magazine, says he's not so sure.
I guess if you want to believe that, anything can be a boutique hotel. But if then anything's a boutique hotel, then in my opinion, nothing is a boutique hotel.
He says nomenclature aside, Marriott is following in the steps of its competitors by creating an edgier brand. And that's essential if it wants to attract generations X and Y.
It has to be a different product than, you know, what their fathers and their father's fathers were used to from a Hilton or a Marriott.
Weinstein says button-down Marriott and style guru Schrager look like an odd couple, but they each excel at what they do, so he says their venture has great potential for success. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Forbes magazine is out with its list of the 100 most powerful celebrities. It's based in large part on how much money they bring in. Oprah is number one. Actor Johnny Depp made a big move up to number six with the Pirates of the Caribbean cash cow. And something we can all be thankful for, Paris Hilton was dropped from the list.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by Duke University's Fuqua School of Business Executive MBA programs, where working professionals earn Duke MBAs from locations around the world. Online at DukeExecutiveMBA.com. The Marketplace Health Desk is supported by the Commonwealth Fund, a private foundation working toward a high-performance health system. On the web at commonwealthfund.org.
Bubbles seem to be an inevitable part of the economy, especially in America. We have such zest for new ideas and for money, sometimes we get carried away. But are bubbles, like the dot-com boom or the housing market, good for the economy? In a new book, author Daniel Gross says they are.
When bubbles leave behind a usable commercial infrastructure, like the internet, all those systems, all that fiber optic cable that was built, it didn't get torn out of the ground. It sat there, and it got very cheap. And in the 90s, a ton of money was spent convincing people to do stuff online. And I call that the mental infrastructure. And that sticks around after bubbles, too. The end result is, come 2002, 2003, if you had an idea for an internet business, you could plug into this really cheap technology that worked, so you could build a business of global scale overnight for very little. And Google is the best example of that.
But bubbles obviously can have a devastating effect on people's lives. You look at the real estate market and the foreclosure problems we're having now. What is the argument for bubbles being a positive part of the economy versus something that we should try to prevent?
I in no way mean to minimize the frequently devastating impact, but again, I think that's only half the story. With real estate, it's unclear what we will have gained from this bubble. Clearly, some of these services like Zillow and Domania, which were built, which are very popular, those will stick around and be useful to people. Clearly, the mentality surrounding refinancing, which encouraged people to watch the direction of interest rates and refinance when things were in their favor, mm-hmm. that will stick around and has some very good economic benefits. But right when the bubble bursts, it's hardest to see the upside.
Are there any bubbles forming right now?
I think we see the classic stages happening with alternative energy. You've got government incentives of all types that are encouraging investment at pretty high levels. It has crossed over into the popular culture. It's impossible to pick up a newspaper or magazine without reading about alternative energy today. You've got Walmart selling compact fluorescent bulbs, the popularity of an inconvenient truth. So I think if a bubble is a nine-inning game with alternative energy, we're in the third or fourth inning.
Daniel Gross, author of Pop, Why Bubbles Are Great for the Economy. Thank you.
Thank you.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.